Iranians hold nationwide rallies to condemn U.S. policies on the 43rd anniversary of the U.S. embassy takeover in Tehran. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi hits back at his American counterpart for saying that the U.S. is going to free Iran.
Mr. President, Iran was freed 43 years ago and is determined not to get subjugated. And Iran will never be your milking cow.
Also, U.S. announces $400 million in additional military aid to Ukraine, bringing Biden administration's total commitment to Kyiv to nearly $19 billion. Thank you for joining us. Iranians have taken part in nationwide rallies to mark National Student Day, which is the anniversary of the takeover of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran in 1979. The day is also dubbed the National Day Against Global Arrogance. Gisumish Ahmadi tells us more.
In more than 900 cities nationwide, Iranians from all walks of life took to the streets on Friday, November the 4th, to mark National Students' Day, the anniversary of the U.S. Embassy takeover, which is also called the National Day Against Global Arrogance. In the capital, Tehran, masses gathered in the streets leading to the building that used to be the U.S. Embassy in Iran before the Islamic Revolution. They chanted slogans expressing their anger and frustration with U.S. hostile policies towards the Islamic Republic of Iran.
We have come here to show our support for our leader in the face of enemies of our country, including the U.S.
Our presence today shows the U.S. that the nation is vigilant and we will not bow down to U.S. plots.
Considering the recent riots, it was even more important for me to take part in the rally this year. We have to show to the world that we love Iran and we support the Islamic Republic.
We are here and it's literally coming onto the streets 43 years. You cannot find any more democratic country than Iran. What's the turnout of elections in Europe, in the West? They're supposed to be like the civilization and democracy, land of democracy. What's the turnout of their election? Look at all these people. These are coming by themselves.
Every year on the 13th day of the Iranian month of Aban, the Iranian nation, particularly students, hold rallies across the country to mark Students' Day. But this year's rallies come amid violent foreign-backed riots in the country, which have claimed the lives of dozens of people and security forces.
What's significant about this year's 13th of Aban or Students' Day demonstrations is the fact that the younger generation taking part in masses to send their message to the world, in particular, many young ladies taking part in this year's demonstration.
The U.S. should know that we have chosen to wear our hijab and no one can force us to take it off.
Our hijab is a symbol of our religion and our faith. Our country is an Islamic country, and this is the way we choose to live.
In a statement, the demonstrators pledged allegiance to the Islamic Republic and the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei. They also called on authorities to address people's legitimate demands and also draw a line between peaceful protesters and rioters. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
Iran's president has slammed his U.S. counterpart for supporting the recent riots in Iran and vowing that Washington will free the country. President Ebrahim Raisi says Iran was freed 40 years ago in a reference to the Islamic Revolution of 1979.
I've been notified that the U.S. president has said that he's seeking to free Iran. Mr. President, Iran was freed 43 years ago and is determined not to get subjugated. And Iran will never be your milking cow.
Raisi told the rally in Tehran to mark the National Day Against Global Arrogance that the Iranian people are resolute and will never allow the U.S. to achieve its, quote, satanic goals. The president says the U.S. has been involved in over 300 wars and 62 coups across the world under the pretext of liberating nations. He says despite all that, Washington keeps trying to portray itself as a supporter of human rights. The U.S. is stepping up its military aid to Ukraine by $400 million despite warnings by Russia. The U.S. will pay for the overhaul of T-72 tanks and for missiles used in Hawk air defense systems. There is also funding to buy hundreds of tactical unmanned aerial systems and dozens of armored boats. The U.S. has been the biggest sponsor of the Ukrainian military since the beginning of its war with Russia in February. The value of the U.S. military aid now stands at close to $19 billion. Moscow has repeatedly warned against the delivery of foreign military aid to Ukraine, saying it only prolongs the conflict. The United States confirms that it has sent soldiers to Ukraine. That's while Russia has repeatedly warned that Washington's involvement in the Ukraine war risks direct confrontation with Moscow. Ramin Mazohiri has more from Chicago.
The Pentagon has admitted that the United States has soldiers on the ground in the Ukraine and far from their embassy, a decision which drastically increases the chances of accidentally sparking an all-out war with Russia. The troops are allegedly only inspecting and doing a proper accounting of U.S. arms deliveries to Ukraine, but many have alleged that their actual role is to provide weapons training and perhaps more. The United States has already provided nearly $20 billion worth of military equipment to Ukraine this year. Both Republican leaders and some progressive Democrats have openly criticized the costly aid, which has only further escalated the conflict. It has already been widely reported that scores of U.S. ex-military personnel and retired officers are helping to lead the war from inside Ukraine. The Pentagon claims the so-called inspectors will not travel to the front lines, but that gives many little comfort.
I think they're acting very recklessly, and they're dragging us to something that could be completely avoided now that you have, you know, Russia saying, hey, we'll use nukes if you don't back off, right? And I think this isn't a war between, you know, Ukraine and the United States. This isn't a war between Ukraine and Russia. It's a war between NATO using Ukraine as a proxy to weaken Russia.
Washington has known for months that their weapons shipments went totally untraced once they entered into Ukraine. Not only does that facilitate Defense Department mismanagement and possible corruption, but the arms could wind up in the hands of far-right militias and be used to destabilize the area for years, as NATO weapons did in the Balkans and then Libya. U.S. weapons have already been found to have been illicitly diverted to Sweden, Denmark, and as far away as the Netherlands.
When you have the United States, when you have the Pentagon saying, hey, we're going to post all these long-range missiles on your border, Ukraine, so that you can reach Moscow in 6 minutes, obviously Russia is going to do something about it. So I think the United States foreign policy right now is essentially pouring billions into Ukraine, pouring like billions into mercenaries, pouring billion into this proxy war in order to weaken Russia.
With the U.S. kicked out of Afghanistan, illegally occupying northeastern Syria, and precariously perched in Iraq, many wonder if Washington and NATO have chosen the Ukraine for their new theater of war. Anti-NATO demonstrations across Europe have been violently repressed in recent weeks. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan has accused the country's incumbent Premier Shehbaz Sharif of involvement in his assassination attempt. Khan said Interior Minister Rana Sanaullah and a senior army commander were also involved in the plot to kill him. He said two shooters tried to kill him in Wazirabad city on Thursday, opening fire at a protest march he was leading to the capital Islamabad. Khan made the remarks in a live speech from a hospital in Lahore where he has been receiving treatment. The politician sustained a gunshot wound in his right leg in the attack. The shooting also left one person dead and nearly a dozen others wounded. Several leaders of Khan's Tehreek-e-Insaf party have blamed the government for the assassination attempt. Government officials have denied the allegation.
Allah, Allah, Allah. an attack on the convoy of ousted Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan wounded him and several of his supporters who were marching towards Islamabad, demanding early elections. Police said that a gunman opened fire at the campaign truck carrying Imran Khan, wounding him slightly. Since his ouster in a parliamentary no-confidence vote in April, Khan has been alleging that his dismissal was a conspiracy engineered by his successor Shahbaz Sharif and the United States. The PTI leadership has directly blamed Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif, Interior Minister Rana Sanaullah, and a high-ranking military official for carrying out the assassination attempt.
We demand that these three men should be removed from their posts. If these people are not removed from their positions, then there will be nationwide protests.
While asking Imran Khan's supporters to stop the blame game, the government has assured every possible support for holding high-profile inquiry into the assassination attempt.
The incident is very unfortunate and condemnable, but it should not be politicized, and speculations on this incident must be avoided.
Political experts believe that the attack on the PTI party chief will trigger further political instability and chaos in the country.
I think in the days to come, the Pakistani political atmosphere will be more charged. It will be more violent. This gun attack on Khan will definitely change Pakistan's political scenario.
The attack on the former Pakistani premier also sparked countrywide protest and international condemnations.
The attack on the former Pakistani Prime Minister has further fueled the ongoing political tensions. It is highly believed that more confrontations would be witnessed in days to come in the country's political arena. Nasir Kazmi in Islamabad.
Tensions on the Korean Peninsula are running high as rival Korea scrambles scores of fighter jets in a show of strength. It comes as South Korea and the U.S. extended their largest ever joint air drills through Saturday. The move has drawn Pyongyang's criticism. During our news review program, we'll discuss the issue with our guests. Let's take a listen.
Now, South Korea says it scrambled dozens of stealth jets after detecting the mobilization of 180 North Korean warplanes in Pyongyang's airspace. Now, the development comes as Seoul and Washington extended their largest ever joint air drills through Saturday. Following the move, Pyongyang once again urged the U.S. and the South to halt their, quote, provocative air exercises, warning of a response. The North Korean Foreign Ministry described the country's recent actions as legitimate self-defensive countermeasures. In response to the extension of the controversial drills, Pyongyang launched three more short-range ballistic missiles and fired a barrage of artillery rounds into a maritime zone neighboring the South. And Pyongyang considers the U.S. and South Korea military maneuvers as rehearsals for invasion. And joining us for the program now is Daniel Lazar, journalist and author, joining us out of New York, and Scott Bennett, former U.S. Army psychological warfare officer, joining us from Beirut. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. Daniel, I guess we'll start with you. There's been a lot of opportunities to try to diffuse tensions on the Korean Peninsula. So why are we now seeing, after a lull in the under the Trump administration, why are we seeing the largest ever joint drills where we know all it does is irk the North?
Because the Biden administration has been very aggressive in terms of drumming up war tensions all over the world, in Eastern Europe and in the Western Pacific as well. Biden is very militant, very hostile to perceived U.S. enemies. He is constantly engaging in provocative military activities, and he's doing the same now. In with regard to North Korea.
Thank you, Daniel and Scott. Welcome to the show here. And now, Scott, it's funny, Daniel says that exactly. The Democrats blame the Republicans for being warmongers. They get in power. They're sticking pens and needles in Taiwan and the Chinese, the side of the Chinese, and now and other places too. We've seen it. And now here they are another opportunity to defuse something, and we're seeing a ratcheting up of tensions. Your initial thoughts, Scott?
Well, let me just first say, here in Lebanon, Beirut, I found a wonderful experience with the people of Palestine, and met with wonderful people in Hezbollah, and the Palestine Literary event has been truly wonderful. It's something all Americans should see and know. And that being said, you know, the lessons of political gamesmanship you certainly see here, and what you're describing in Korea is really a very big game that the Biden administration is pushing. I think it's going to perhaps end in remarkable devastation for U.S. influence, because the U.S. is trying to use South Korea like they're using Ukraine. And Ukraine has been a disastrous failure and is about to be completely politically annihilated by Russia. And the same could be said for South Korea. They would be militarily and politically annihilated by North Korea with its backing from China and its backing from Russia. And I don't think North Korea is going to, or South Korea is going to follow the U.S. dictates. I think South Korea is slowly trying to depart itself from this warmongering, reckless, senility is the only thing I can describe it, coming under Joe Biden. This is ironically what the Saudis have done too. They've recognized the insanity of the Democrat Party, and the Saudis have inclined away from the Democrats, more towards BRICS and Russia. And I think there's appeasement, you know, possibly for Iran, despite Saudi's reckless activities with the MEK and trying to participate in the disruptions in Iran, which are not real. They're all CIA, Mossad, Saudi-backed. But the North Korea situation, the South Korea situation, I think is going to have the same sort of repercussions and end. North Korea is responding to the provocations that the United States has pushed Seoul into doing. Remember, they didn't have these military games, these military maneuvers, when President Trump was in office, because he wanted to heal and redefine the relationship with North Korea. And instead, now Joe Biden and his reckless lunatic warmongers like Lloyd Austin and John Kirby and Sullivan and the other CIA puppets of the State Department, they're trying to foment conflict with North Korea. Why? Because they know they're going to be devastated in the upcoming election, and they're trying to distract the American people with wars in Ukraine and now potential wars in Asia with China and North Korea. But I think it's only going to isolate the U.S.
Thank you both for joining us on the program. Always a pleasure to have you both check in with us. Daniel Lazar from New York and Scott Bennett there joining us from Beirut. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
That's a wrap for this hour's World News.
This is the Heart of Life pounding IRIB English Radio.
The Brazilian people, along with anti-imperialist activists and politicians, as well as environmental advocates, are now happy at the victory of Lula da Silva as the elected president of Brazil because of his pragmatic policies and a strong opposition to U.S. hegemony. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. The website of Common Dreams wrote, Former Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva's victory in the country's presidential election, which one climate policy journalist called the most important climate election of the year, yielded a hopeful response from environmental defenders as they celebrated an end in sight for President Jair Bolsonaro's destructive policies in the Amazon rainforest. Da Silva, who is commonly called Lula, spoke directly in his victory speech about protecting the 1.5 million square miles that the Amazon spans in Brazil, saying Brazil and the planet need a living Amazon. Lula pledged to reverse the damage done by Bolsonaro, who has pushed miners and other industrial interests to develop in the Amazon. In the 4 years since Bolsonaro took office, deforestation has soared to a 15-year high. During his campaign, the president-elect said he plans to restore funding to the Brazilian Institute of Environment and Renewable Natural Resources, the federal agency which protects the rainforest from extractive industries following Bolsonaro's weakening of environmental enforcement. Let's fight for zero deforestation, Lula said in his first speech as president-elect. Brazil is ready to resume its leading role in the fight against the climate crisis, protecting all our biomass, especially the Amazon forest. We will resume monitoring and surveillance of the Amazon and combat any and all illegal activity, whether mining, logging, or improper agricultural occupation, he said. Deforestation fell by 72% between 2004 and 2016 when Lula and former President Dilma Rousseff, both of whom represent the Workers' Party, were leading the country. Under Bolsonaro and his right-wing Liberal Party, the amount of forest that was cleared in 2021 was the largest annual figure in more than a decade. The lungs of the earth will breathe easier tonight, said Brazil-based Reuters climate correspondent Jake Spring, referring to rainforest's ability to absorb carbon dioxide. While there is lots of work to be done, added Oxford University professor Dr. Jennifer Cassidy, the Amazon exhales a sigh of relief. In addition to fighting deforestation by stepping up enforcement, Lula plans to grant protected status to nearly 200,000 square miles of undesignated territory in the Amazon, setting it aside for indigenous communities or wildlife. He has also wanted to grant subsidies for sustainable farming, establish a federal authority tasked with ensuring Brazil is in line with goals set by the Paris Climate Agreement, and reform the country's tax codes to require higher taxes on pollution-causing companies and incentivize a shift to sustainable energy sources by offering lower tax rates. Although Lula won the election by a margin of just 1.8%, said University of California, Berkeley professor Daniel Aldana Cohen, his victory is a massive win for Brazil, for its working class, its black and indigenous communities, and against fascism. In addition to helping preserve the wildlife and biodiversity within the Amazon, Lula has pledged to enact policies that will protect the home of 24 million people, including hundreds of thousands of members of indigenous tribes. In the first year of Bolsonaro's presidency, invasions of indigenous lands rose by 150%. The nightmare is due to end at last, said Marcio Astrini, executive secretary of the Brazilian Climate Observatory, adding, stopping the slaughter of indigenous peoples and the devastation of the Amazon will require countering powerful gangs and very often the interests of allies and supporters in local governments and the parliament. As advocates for climate action, human rights, and democracy around the world applauded the Brazilian public for rejecting Bolsonaro's policies, Norwegian officials announced the country would resume subsidizing the protection of the Amazon, which it halted in 2019 after Bolsonaro took office. Lula, in his post-election speech, said, "We are open to international cooperation to preserve the Amazon, whether in the form of investment or scientific research."
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and for your information, the holy city of Qom in Iran is indeed the foremost center of diffusion of true Islamic knowledge, with students from all over the world coming to acquire bezels of wisdom. And here is what the Holy Prophet's sixth infallible heir, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace be upon him, has said regarding the city which is blessed by the holy shrine of his granddaughter, Hazrat Fatima Ma'sumeh, peace be upon her. Indeed, God has a sanctuary, and that is Mecca, the holy Kaaba. The messenger of God, Prophet Muhammad, has a sanctuary, and that is Medina. The commander of the faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, has a sanctuary, and that is Kufa. And we, the Ahlul Bayt, have a sanctuary, and that is Qom.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, power and its manifestations. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. Among man's innate desires, mention can be made of the desire to wield power, the desire of power, to attain power, to be capable of performing deeds, and to have control over other beings. This desire also emerges in childhood and endures to the end of a person's life. Of course, this desire has degrees depending on the age differences, period of life, and external factors. A healthy infant's motions and movements of hands and feet and the untiring gambling of children are indications of this innate desire. It's a desire that most human beings do have from the very first day they step into this world. So by and by, range of man's quest for power increases, extending to infinity. The more he grows up or she grows up, that particular feeling of power, the wield of power, increases in them. At first, performing various deeds, establishing power and extending strength occur by means of stimulating nerves and by muscles, with the aid of natural powers alone. So these constant movements made by the child on instinct help increase his physical power. And as time goes by, his muscles become stronger and more ready to perform greater and more laborious functions. This goes on until he reaches the peak of youth and the climax of physical power. From then on, he faces the period of stagnation and inertia. Then comes the period of senility and old age. Gradually, the physical powers are exhausted, but the zest for power never dies down in the man. Power and manifestations is something that grows with the man from the younger age to when he is old. How can we control this?
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. We are talking about power and its manifestations. To extend the domain of his power, man does not suffice with natural powers, By the help of sciences and industries, man endeavors to find better services. He endeavors to find better devices to conquer the world and subjugate the universe, you know, like to take over the universe. It goes without saying that scientific discoveries and inventions, especially in recent times, have greatly contributed to the satisfaction of this inborn desire, and will later do so as well. Man does not even refrain from using the power of his fellow creatures, in as far as conditions and facilities can permit him. Man uses others for his own benefit, effort to reach social positions, and to be honored nationally. As well as the nation's demand for superiority at the international level. And all these are manifestations of this desire, which at times appear in a correct and sound form, while at other times it appears in the form of aggressions on the rights of others in various shapes of oppressive colonization and exploitation. So the quest for increased power does not stop at this level. Rather, it even embraces impeccable and metaphysical powers as well. Various branches of exotic sciences, like spiritism and different forms of sensual mathematics, are all indicative of man's wondrous efforts to develop his ability. Power is something that is an inbuilt feeling in a human being, and it has so many manifestations that, if not controlled very well, can lead to his demise. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Until next episode, inshallah, fi amanillah, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
China is taking the final step in the construction of its Tiangong space station, the second permanently inhabited station in low Earth orbit after NASA's International Space Station. The second and last lab component of the station was launched on Monday. The uncrewed module is called Mengtian, which means dreaming of the heavens. The rocket carrying it blasted off from China's Space Launch Center on the coast of the southern island province of Hainan. The 23-ton Mengtian is an advanced lab and does not have space for sleeping and sanitation. Instead, it has more space to carry payloads for scientific studies. Fan Ping is the chief designer of the project. She says this is a special step towards space research.
I think the Mengtian lab module is quite special, as it is for experiment only, which can be seen as a dedicated studio. There are 13 scientific experiment racks in the module and 37 exposed loading stations outside the module, enabling astronauts to do more extravehicular loading experiments in the future.
The Mengtian module is the last building block of the T-shaped Tiangong station. It has to fly 400 kilometers to join the two-module combination already dispatched into space. Together, the three modules will construct the station, which is designed for a lifespan of at least 10 years.
It's always a tricky task to remember people's names at a party, but not in this particular gathering in Tokyo, where all the guests at the exact same name, Hirokazu Tanaka. 178 Hirokazu Tanakas came together on Saturday to set a new namesake gathering world record. Their ages spanned from 3 years old to 80. The Guinness World Record for the largest gathering of people with the same first and last name previously belonged to Martha Stewart. 164 people with that name came together in New York in 2005. In the Tanaka's gathering, every man was assigned an alias inspired by their hobbies, occupation, or favorite foods to tell them apart from others. One nicknamed by his birthplace says, "It's strange to meet so many people with the same name." Obviously.
It's a strange feeling to know that there are nearly 200 people with the same name. To be honest, I'd presume there are more popular names out there like Suzuki and Sato. This achievement is really because of the efforts of our organizer.
The man who organized this gathering is a 53-year-old Hirokazu Tanaka who has worked for years to make this happen. He says his quest began in 1994 when he stumbled upon news about a baseball prodigy with the same name. After that, he began tirelessly scouring the nation for his namesakes. He then founded the Hirokazu Tanaka campaign that brought the men together and created a strange friendship among them. Thousands of baby turtles have been released into Peru's Amazon basin in an attempt to preserve the rainforest ecosystem. More than 6,000 hatchlings of three endangered species of turtles have been released into lakes and lagoons in Peru to help them repopulate. To make this happen, wildlife officials collected the eggs from their natural habitat and transferred them to artificial beaches until they hatched. The river turtles are considered vulnerable because for many years they have been killed for human consumption or kept as pets. Scientists are currently trying to conserve the Amazon to avoid catastrophic climate change, and Peru has the second largest share of the rainforest after Brazil. Another world record news. This time it has been set in Switzerland. A Swiss railway company has run the world's longest passenger train with a trip on one of the most spectacular tracks through the Alps. To celebrate its 175th anniversary, Switzerland's rail industry launched the world's longest ever passenger train, measuring around 2 kilometers. The electric train took almost an hour to cover around 25 kilometers over the UNESCO World Heritage Albula Line in eastern Switzerland. The Albula Line is famous for its endless swooping curves and steep descents. Rail enthusiasts lined the valley to watch the train's 100 cars snake through the Alps. Belgium and the Netherlands were the previous record holders for the world's longest passenger train. They used standard railway through the flat landscapes.
If you enjoy street art, then you'll probably like Iztapalapa district in Mexico's capital city. Nearly 300 neighborhoods in this area are beautifully painted with brightly colored murals for all to enjoy. Visitors can also ride a cable car and take a tour of the art from above. The district is home to nearly 7,000 murals and graffiti painted on all sorts of surfaces, including rooftops. Iztapalapa Murals is a project that was promoted by the Mexico City's mayor in 2018. The goal of the project was to recover and dignify public spaces through art and involve neighbors in its creation and conservation. Iztapalapa is one of the poorest municipalities in the capital, and the initiative aims to reduce neighborhood violence through public lighting of the murals during the night.
It is never too late to learn a new skill. That's what 100-year-old Nada Rudan has shown with her art when she discovered her love for painting at the age of 87. The Bosnian native says she started to paint to keep herself busy, and now she finds the days are often too short to fit in everything she wanted to do. The artist paints for 3 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon without glasses. Rudan marked her 100th birthday with an exhibition of all the works that she has painted over the years.
My 100th birthday, I've celebrated it at sea. That was really a big event for me. Before that, I had an exhibition that I didn't hope for. But my children persuaded me. I was against it. I'm not an artist. I said, children, don't embarrass me.
She says she's inspired by nature and her travel around the globe. Rudan has lived in numerous areas such as Central America, Hawaii Islands, Europe, and the Asian Himalayas, among many other places. The artist survived both World War II and the siege of Sarajevo by Bosnian Serb forces.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Iran's Kish Island is known as the paradise of the Persian Gulf. Our correspondent Youssef Jalali has been to the stunning southern Iranian resort island and has filed this report about its beautiful attractions.
It's no land at the heart of a scorching but amazing island. This snow town is one of the latest entertainment centers in Iran's Kish Island in the Persian Gulf. Every year, some 2 million visitors from inside and outside Iran visit the island to enjoy its attractions, from its entertainment centers to its stunning beach.
The beach and the pier in Kish are really peaceful and tranquilizing. It's the third time I'm visiting the island, and I went parasailing, water skiing, and I'm planning to go scuba diving.
Kish Island offers all kinds of sea entertainment activities, from scuba diving to sailing, and oh yes, flyboarding. Besides sea sports, visitors can enjoy its amusement parks and a range of leisure activities inside the island. And if you're a tireless window shopper, Kish is a land of malls and shopping centers.
Kish is an amazing island. It used to be an abandoned island some 3 decades ago, but today it is a luxurious tourist resort with modern buildings and exciting recreational places.
Despite all the pleasure one can have in Kish, the island still has many shortcomings. The major issue annoying visitors is the poor accommodation services.
Hotel facilities and services are a bit weak given the large number of tourists that visit this island. They need to pay more attention to the accommodation infrastructure.
Just a few hundred kilometers away from Kish, there's a tourist magnet in the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, which absorbs the chunk of foreign tourists. While U.S. sanctions on Iran are a major factor to blame for Kish lagging behind in its rivalry with Dubai, the island's officials believe it still has a chance to win the game of tourism against Dubai.
If we want to excel, it is not going to be a tough job. We need to work on two major areas. The first is the infrastructure, and the second is regulations that would allow tourists or investors to easily come to Kish to entertain themselves or do business.
Situated off the southern coast of Iran in the Persian Gulf, Kish is one of Iran's free trade zones. Foreign travelers do not need a visa to visit the island, as travel permits are issued on arrival by Kish officials and are valid for up to 14 days.
With its mesmerizing nature and eye-catching urban landscapes, Kish has earned the title of the Bride of the Persian Gulf. Its authorities say the island is already a hub for Iranian travelers, but they say they seek to turn it into a regional tourist magnet. Youssef Jalali from Kish Island.
A 78-year-old artist is making a comeback with a unique art installation on Governor's Island in the United States of America. One of its biggest features is the sound and creaking of moving chains.
There's a project that I proposed for a commission in St. Louis. The site of the commission was the area near the Mississippi River and the St. Louis courthouse. So I wanted to do a piece that addressed those areas and the subjects. And and of course we have those areas of Mississippi River, which is a place that you talk about the history of American commerce, but also we can talk about the history of slavery.
Charles Gaines wanted to highlight the role slavery played in building the economy of the United States. That's why he purposely used chains, and the sculptor pointedly faces the Statue of Liberty in New York City. The installation is roughly 30 meters long and activated by colossal chains that rotate on anchors. The installation is part of a three-chapter series called The American Manifest, Moving Chains. It will be kept for all to see until the summer of next year.
A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out three patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC.
If you have a sweet tooth, then this next bit of news is just for you. Visitors are now taking advantage of the expanded version of Cakeland, which is an immersive art gallery in the U.S. city of Los Angeles. The structure is meant to feel like a giant multi-layered cake. It's entirely made of artificial materials, but looks like if it's full of cherries, whipped cream, and layers of cake. Artist Scott Hoff says he used nearly a ton of pipe frosting, 120 mirrors, and thousands of cherries. Plus, he embedded thousands of crystals in the walls as a final touch. The artist says he chose to develop Cakeland after he noticed how much his artificial cake sculptures were welcomed by viewers.
So I chose cake because, number one, it's really beautiful. Number two, it's really fun to do. And number three, it engages the viewers in such a meaningful way.
Hoff says he never actually made a real cake before and has mainly followed his enthusiasm for fake food as the inspiration for this project. Visitors are able to walk through the cake, a labyrinth, and explore various rooms. While there is a lot of deliciousness and lightness of the cakes, visitors to this cake land can discover some interesting darker elements as they wander around. The art installation has continued to expand since it was founded by Hov in 2020.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
China's Tiangong space station nears completion. Experts say that Tiangong will be the world's second lab in orbit and is set to host more than 1,000 scientific experiments over the next 10 years. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Nature, China's space station Tiangong is almost complete. The third and final module is scheduled to launch into low Earth orbit very soon in the future. The station, only the second lab in orbit, is expected to host more than 1,000 scientific experiments over its lifetime of at least 10 years. These include studying the effects of microgravity on living tissues and the behavior of fires. Building a space station is a massive achievement, says Paolo De Souza, who develops space technologies at Griffith University in the Gold Coast, Australia, adding, "It's outstanding." The space station has opened a new scientific playground for Chinese researchers. Researchers from other countries will also have access to the orbiting lab, says Brad Tucker, an astrophysicist at the Australian National University in Canberra. China has selected 9 international experiments to fly to the outpost through a collaborative project with the United Nations, developed by researchers from Japan, Russia, India, and Mexico, among others. The final module, Mangatian, is one of the 2 modules designed to host scientific experiments. The other, Ventian, was launched in July. Together, Mangatian and Ventian will make up the space station's arms by docking onto the core module, Tianhe, which has been orbiting Earth since April 2021. The Mangatian module is critical to restoring symmetry to the station because it is currently flying along lopsided, which requires a lot of energy to keep oriented, says Jonathan McDowell, an astronomer at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Several cargo missions and astronauts have already visited the outpost, and a 3-person crew now lives there. On board are more than 20 mini labs fitted with centrifuges, cold chambers reaching temperatures as low as minus 80 degrees Celsius, a high-temperature furnace, multiple lasers, and an optical atomic clock. These will be used to conduct experiments similar to those carried out on the International Space Station, ISS, including investigations into how long-term confinement in low Earth orbit affects astronauts' health, how to prevent fires on various materials, and the quantum properties of gases. 3 facilities located on the outside of the station